Welcome back to Vermont Edition. I'm Michaela Lefrak. Last week, we saw a record-breaking number of COVID-19 cases here in Vermont, and cases have increased 55% over the last 2 weeks. Now, those numbers have baffled state officials who have been touting Vermont's high vaccination rate for months now. Children between 5 and 11 years old are also contracting COVID-19 at the highest rate of any age group in Vermont. Good news is they're also newly eligible for the vaccine. And we learned recently that more than 14,000 Vermont children have made appointments or have already received their first dose of that vaccine. That's more than 30% of the total population of 5 to 11-year-olds here in the state. So here to help us parse through all of our questions, all these numbers and statistics about the pandemic is Dr. Mark Levine, Vermont's State Health Commissioner. Dr. Levine, welcome back to the program.
Thank you very much, Michaela.
Now, Dr. Levine, we heard yesterday in Governor Phil Scott's press conference that these high case numbers are not expected to, you know, sharply decrease over the next 4 weeks. But we're also at the same time in the midst of the booster shot rollout and the children's vaccine rollout. So why exactly wouldn't cases go down? Wouldn't case rates start to go down if more and more people are getting vaccinated?
Thanks for that question. I noticed in your introductory comments, you used the word baffled. And I want to say that, you know, we learn from this virus every day. We've been doing that for almost 2 years now. And the fact of the matter is, I don't think it's so baffling. If I could just discuss a few of the things I discussed at the press conference yesterday about why we're seeing so many cases right now.
Sure.
Because there's really an abundance of reasons, and there's abundance of things going on concurrently, as you point out. We're trying to vaccinate new age groups and revaccinate older age groups, et cetera. So I just want to put it all into context. First of all, we're dealing with the Delta variant, which is a very different variant than anything we've dealt with previously in level of contagiousness, the way it spreads, the way it spreads almost quicker than you can alert and trace contacts. So that's very important. It's also true that Vermont was very successful in preventing anyone from getting the virus until the Delta variant. We think that maybe 3% of the population at most may have had any immunity to COVID before the Delta variant emerged. So that's a victim of being very successful in a way. Another victim of our own success story is the fact that we very effectively vaccinated the most susceptible people in our population and did it very efficiently so that the oldest Vermonters and those with high-risk conditions were all vaccinated at a very high rate that outpaced much of the rest of the country back in the beginning of this year. So we know from more recent research that immunity can wane. So that group is having some waning of their immunity. We also know that things are different now. We're more mobile. We're getting together in more groups. We're indoors more, especially most recently as the weather is cooling down. And all of that together is behavior change. And the virus will thrive on opportunities to have people congregating together in ways that they weren't really able to long before. So we have all that going on in the background, and now we have a booster campaign that's going very successfully. We're leading the country, actually, and a new 5 to 11 year age group campaign that is really going very well also. But these things take time because, as you know, once you get vaccinated, you need to wait a certain number of weeks before you have full effectiveness from that dose. So when it comes to our kids, we're not going to really see the impact, even if everybody got vaccinated this week, we're not going to see the impact till the middle of December. And when it comes to the adults and their boosters, we're going to start seeing that impact now because we've been doing that for, you know, 3-4 weeks already. And we're obviously continuing on. So some of that impact is going to be felt. for sure. But it's very hard because the reality is all northern states, not just northern New England, but all northern states are seeing increases in their cases over this period of time as the seasons have changed, which was somewhat predictable. The rest of the country, much of it, like in the Deep South, is not seeing a tremendous amount of resurgence of cases, although their testing is at much lower levels than us in the North. And the country as a whole has seen a leveling off. Things were dropping down. Now things have leveled off and for cases actually gone up a little bit nationwide. So we're still in for a bit of a roller coaster ride with this virus in summary.
We have a question from Marlene in Williston. Marlene, you are on the air. What's your question for Dr. Levine?
Yes, I do.
Go ahead, Marlene.
Okay, thank you. Hi, Dr. Levine. Thanks for taking my call. I'm wondering, with the resurgence that we've had, which seems to me to be astronomical relative to where we've been for the last year and a half, why aren't we doing more mask mandates and really mandating vaccines to get into restaurants, vaccines to get into public events? I was in Montreal last week. I finally made the decision to go up, and they have such an efficient plan. Everyone's wearing masks. Nobody's yelling at each other in a grocery store. They all have masks. They have vaccine cards. As you go into a restaurant, you want to get in, you show them your card. Just like if you're going to have a drink somewhere, you show them your ID. I don't know why the government is so reluctant to put these in place.
Now, thank you, Marlene, for your question. Just for some context for our listeners, this back and forth about whether we need to put a state of emergency in place in order for the governor to be able to institute a mask mandate has been going on for many months now. And Dr. Levine, I want to ask a kind of a related question, too, before I let you respond to Marlene. We had a listener tweet us a question. He said, when 25 people have died in the last 2 weeks from COVID-19, do you, Dr. Levine, feel like you're doing everything necessary to protect Vermonters?
Good. Let me take all of that together, if I may.
Sure.
The listener's question sort of implies country versus country, our own country, national policy versus state policy. So it gets a little complicated. But the reality is, everyone should understand, nothing new has been invented to deal with this respiratory virus. All of the guidance that we have continued to give for 20 months, and specifically during the Delta variant, continues on. Washing your hands, practicing good respiratory etiquette, not gathering in large groups, socially distancing, wearing a mask indoors, whether you're vaccinated or unvaccinated. None of that has changed, nor can we build upon that to any tremendous extent. Now, the word mandate gets brought up repeatedly, which is something that governments can do, usually in emergency states. So we'll start with the vaccine mandate. In Vermont, you know, the governor has used state employees as sort of a role model or an example for other sectors to examine when it comes to policies regarding vaccine mandates. And we have a mandate in place along with a testing out option for those employees. The federal government has already enacted a mandate for the healthcare sector, and more and more guidance is coming out in just in the last week, actually, regarding the business sector and employers who have 100 employees or more, and how they can go about mandating vaccine for their populations, also with testing out types of options. So there's not a lot of real need at this point for the government of Vermont to, you know, proceed on an accelerated pace with regard to mandating vaccines, because a lot of this is happening at the federal level. When it comes to mandating masks, this is something I think about literally every day. There's a big difference in the pandemic now versus early in the year when we were dealing with the UK variant, the B117. And that is, of course, that we have vaccine. So though people don't always want to hear this, vaccination is the primary mitigation strategy. That means getting those who have chosen for whatever reason not to get vaccinated to get vaccinated quickly, those who are in the younger age group that we just talked about to get vaccinated, and those who need boosters to get boosted. That is the primary strategy when it comes to this virus. When you look at the population's appetite for mandates and government's appetite for enacting mandates for masking, you find that there's about 6 or 7 states that have actually still have a mandate of masking in place, and the District of Columbia. And I've talked to many of my colleagues in these states. And in fact, as recently as yesterday evening, my colleague from New Mexico, where there is a mask mandate. And this colleague, she was very, very much appreciative of the fact that their population had passed the 70% mark with regard to vaccination. And they're having another escalating out of control episode in their COVID case rate as we speak. They have a mask mandate and they've had one in place consistently for several months. The performance of mask mandates, I believe, when this is researched and all is said and done, when the smoke is cleared, so to speak, is that there's going to be mixed performance when it comes to the Delta variant. So I want to be very specific. I totally 100% believe and am giving sincere guidance regarding the need for masking indoors. I totally believe that the literature on mask mandates is accurate and that they have been successful, but all of that is pre-Delta. There's something about either the Delta variant, the virus itself, or perhaps equally so, the appetite of the public for compliance with things like masking and their desire appropriately to be out and about again and doing the things that they've always wanted to do, that is making even something like a mask mandate a real challenge at this time in the pandemic. And of course, enforcement of that is a whole different issue. Now, there are things that are different between our country and other countries, specifically Canada, that I won't comment at this time. But certainly, I think a lot of people are looking at the word mandate and saying, if we were only doing the mask mandate, nothing that we've been seeing in this pandemic recently would have occurred. And I'm not sure that's a fair assessment. And that's why we've been very much not only talking about personal responsibility, but also talking about the reality that we really want to be protecting those who could get the most severe outcomes during this pandemic, and all of us doing all the things that we provide guidance on every day, including wearing masks indoors, can really accomplish that.
Well, let's dive a bit more then into updates around the vaccine, since it sounds like that is where your emphasis lies right now in terms of curbing the spread of this virus. We have a question from Kevin in South Burlington on just this topic. Kevin, what is your question for Dr. Levine?
Hi, yes. Can you hear me?
I can, yes. Go ahead.
Oh, okay, yes. Hi. Thanks for taking my question. Dr. Levine, I have a son who's 6 years old. I've been looking forward to the vaccine for him for some time. Wednesday morning at 8 a.m., I was there on my computer ready to register him, and it didn't work. After several tries, I called the phone line. I was on the phone for about 2 hours, kind of struggling to get this done. Finally was able to get an appointment. They were kind of disappearing as we were on the phone. Later, there was a VT Digger article that said that BIPOC families were blocked from registering for the vaccine online due to a glitch. And my family identifies as BIPOC. So I wanted to hear from you what happened there, what kind of follow-up there has been, what was the nature of this glitch? Is it definitely a computer glitch? And what is being done to address this going forward?
Yeah, thank you for calling attention to that, because there was indeed a computer glitch. We put out a statement that attested to that, and it was a genuine apology that had impeded the ability of certain families to be able to get their vaccination appointment taken care of in the registration system. Certainly, it wouldn't be the first time that, you know, we've had issues like that arise. It's just unfortunate it happened in the midst of tremendous enthusiasm and excitement for yet a new population of kids now to be vaccinated. And I wouldn't want it to reverse what I regard as such incredible and genuine progress we had made throughout the course of the pandemic in working with our BIPOC population, working with advocacy groups and trusted parts of that population that helped us get the rate of vaccination in our BIPOC population literally up to the same level of non-Hispanic white vaccination, where in the earlier part of the vaccine efforts, there was as much as a 14 or 15% disparity between the rates. We've got that well under 1% now. And it's not just our hard work, it's really the hard work of the entire community and all of the partnerships that we've been able to forge with really trusted groups, setting up neighborhood clinics, et cetera. So I would hate to have this computer glitch erase all of that, the recognition of that progress, but at the same time, I'm very empathetic to the fact that this complicated a number of people's lives in a very significant way and may delay the number of days that go by before they could get an appointment. I will say that hopefully the issue could have been resolved on the phone, and I hope it was. I also want to note just for everyone who's listening that pharmacies are now getting more access to the vaccine from the federal government's allocation. And starting next week, lots of primary care practices are going to be able to provide this vaccine to their patients as well.
Now, Dr. Levine, you noted just there the initial differences in vaccination rates among white, non-Hispanic Vermonters and BIPOC Vermonters. And I'm curious if the state has data on those demographic breakdowns for children who have either gotten the first dose of the vaccine or are registered to get it.
You know, I bet you we are accumulating that. It's kind of early in the effort, so I can't really give you any numbers of any sort at this point in time. But we've continued to not only list, you know, the high-risk conditions as opportunity for being prioritized in vaccination, but certainly identifying, self-identifying as a family or a member of the BIPOC community is also and a priority.
Okay. We have a question from Sister Lorian in Berlin. You are on the air. Go ahead, please. Hi, Sister Lorian, are you there?
Yes.
Hi, what's your question for Dr. Levine?
I was wondering what has happened to the old viruses. Where are alpha and beta now? Are they on the ground, in the air? Are they going to come back? What happens to these things when they're not in people's bodies?
That's a great question. And I don't want to make any promises about my answer because this virus is very clever. But the reality is, at least in the state of Vermont, and it's true around the country as well. 100% of what we're finding when we do whole genome sequencing, so genetic analysis of the virus that's in people, is the Delta variant. And it's greater than 95% around the country. So that means any of these older variants we're hardly finding anywhere. So they are being, if you will, outcompeted by the Delta variant. We're seeing evolution occurring right before our eyes, much faster rate than anyone has ever seen before. So the reality is, some of these older variants, they probably haven't vanished completely, but they're going to be really, really hard to find. And once they stop infecting people, they don't get transmitted from person to person. So they essentially just disappear. You know, whether they're in the environment or what have you, hard to say. The vaccines are very effective against them. So even if somebody came in contact with one, they probably wouldn't even know it, because it just wouldn't impact them very well, very much at all. So these have essentially just disappeared. You know, there used to be kinds we were very afraid of, like the South Africa variant and the Brazil variant, ones that we were hardly seeing in this country. Now, we continue to hardly see them in this country, even though the earlier predictions were that they were going to be possible significant events for us in the future.
Let's go down to Miriam in East Montpelier. Miriam, you are on the air. What's your question?
Hi. So I have some friends who have decided not to get vaccinated, and I was talking to one in particular who feels that she can trust her own immune system to take care of her. And what I was hoping, Dr. Levine, that you might be able to do is to explain very clearly in the most readily understandable way why somebody who's not vaccinated, how that person affects the community around them, because they are more likely to catch COVID and also to spread COVID.
I'll do that for you. And I'll also give a little bit of instructions about how to talk to people like your friend. So first of all, vaccination does impact, of course, the person themselves, above and beyond anyone else. However, it needs to be really well understood that vaccination then can also impact your own family unit, your own cluster of friends, and in general, your greater community. One thing that we've really found Vermonters have accepted throughout this pandemic and really demonstrated in so many worthy ways is their concern about what we term the most vulnerable. And that means that my getting vaccinated may help someone older than me, someone who has some underlying conditions that would make them very high risk to get COVID and have a bad outcome, or perhaps a young child who is too young to get vaccinated and doesn't need to get this virus either. So I will be helping all of them by getting vaccinated. And there's a sense of altruism there that Vermonters have really, really demonstrated very, very well throughout the pandemic. So that's very, very important. Now, when you talk about the impact on the community, it's also, even if I don't come into contact with somebody who works in one of our prisons, who works in one of our nursing homes, who teaches at one of our schools, I may end up coming into contact with someone who does come in contact with them and pass that along in another way, so that eventually the virus can find its way back to these more susceptible and vulnerable settings. Now, with regard to how to talk about vaccines with friends, family, whoever, who appear to be more skeptical or more resistant to getting the needle themselves. Clearly, we have to understand that everybody has their reasons. And even if we disagree with them, there's probably some reason that they might have that we could empathize with. So showing some empathy is always a good idea. The only thing I would have little empathy for is if they are in the process of spreading misinformation around that is clearly untrue and not scientifically grounded. But then ask your friends, you know, what their concerns exactly are, just to see if you can direct them to resources or other individuals who can help them understand better about their concerns, and help them find a reason themselves to get vaccinated. Perhaps one of the reasons I just listed in terms of who they may come in contact with in their lives. And then if you get them to that point, help them make their vaccination happen. Sometimes it requires watching a child while they go off and get vaccinated. Sometimes it involves providing transportation. Whatever number of reasons, find that reason that could actually be the one that gets them to go from hesitant to I'm actually going to do it. Because in my experience, very, very small numbers of Vermonters are totally resistant and skeptical. The ones that are in that 50,000 people right now who have yet to get vaccinated are probably only a small proportion like the skeptical. Most of them are needing to just be pushed along a little. They've been sitting on the fence a while and it just hasn't been a priority for them. Or there have been things in their life that just interfere with them focusing on this and getting it done. Thanks for the question.
Now, Dr. Levine, I wanted to ask you about the recent outbreak at St. Mike's. Vermont made the top of the New York Times website yesterday with news about this outbreak, 77 cases at St. Mike's that they say was fueled by Halloween parties. Now, we're going into the Thanksgiving season. People are going to be, getting together with their families. And we've gotten a lot of questions about, you know, what they should do in light of the fact that, you know, indoor gatherings with a lot of people not wearing masks, are clearly fueling some pretty serious outbreaks. So what do you say to folks who are trying to figure out what their Thanksgiving plans are, particularly folks who are vaccinated?
Certainly. So the St. Mike's outbreak, you know, everything's a little more complicated than it may look on the surface. I wouldn't want to say every case is Halloween related, but clearly the administration there and the students are all aware of Halloween-associated cases. So that's really in the category of let's all collectively as a state learn some lessons from this. Because, yes, it was St. Mike's, but believe me, there are other gatherings around the state that we in the health department are aware of that have nothing to do with college students or a specific campus that also relate to Halloween gatherings. So let's all learn from this experience. As I alluded to in my comments about mask mandates and what have you, you know, people are at a different stage in this pandemic right now, where they don't always want to just hear the guidance, or even if they welcome the guidance, they don't always want to obey it because they want to move on with their lives. It's been a long time. And thinking that they can get together with a few households is something that they should be able to do. And so how do they do that safely is really the question. So masking indoors is still a great idea. Obviously, when people are indoors, they're eating and drinking, and it's impossible to do that. But that doesn't mean it's impossible to do that the entire time they're together. Now, when you have people coming for Thanksgiving, generally, that's going to be family and close friends. So it's not going to be regarded as insulting or imposing on anyone to find out if they are indeed vaccinated, or to even create your own rules about who's going to be invited to the table. I understand that creates sometimes challenges within families and what have you. And I've talked to so many people who feel so badly about that. But the reality is, if they want to impose that kind of a rule, that is their prerogative. And they should feel free to have some of those empathetic discussions I just talked about with their relatives or friends who don't find that vaccine is top of their list. There's also going to be some guidance we're releasing regarding testing, because there is a way to try to, you know, nothing's 100%, but to try to be totally reassured, or at least as much as you can be, regarding the infection status of a person coming. And that would involve testing, usually I would say about 72 hours before arrival, because that realistically gives the test adequate time to come back. And it's a small enough window. That's with the PCR testing, that's free. If people wanted to use their own store-bought or internet-bought reliable and valid antigen testing, they could do that for several days concurrently and be totally reassured that they're not actively infectious at the time they gather together. So I think a combination of strategies, continuing to respect masking as an important strategy at this time of viral resurgence, using vaccination status in whatever way people are comfortable using it, and using testing in an educated way.
And when are you releasing that guidance on testing?
I imagine we'll probably talk about it at the next press conference.
Okay. Let's go now to Joe in Newbury. Joe, you are on the air. Hi, Joe, are you there? All right. What's your question or comment for Dr. Levine?
About the prevalence or likelihood of breakthrough cases.
Dr. Levine, what is the prevalence of breakthrough cases in Vermont right now?
Right now, it's slightly over 1%. So 1 in 100 chance being a breakthrough case.
All right. And on that subject of statistics, I know on the government's COVID-19 dashboard, there are a lot of different numbers up there. And we know many of our listeners have been checking this dashboard daily throughout the course of the pandemic. We also put a lot of emphasis here on the daily case count numbers. But as you emphasize when you come on the show every other week, it's pretty easy to miss a lot of context when we just say, for example, case count numbers or breakthrough case numbers. So for our listeners who are looking for clarity, looking for, you know, one number to really track that gives them a sense of, you know, what is happening with the pandemic in Vermont and how they should respond in their day-to-day lives, what do you think is that important number or piece of data to keep an eye on day-to-day?
Boy, that's a challenging question. Because you've already alluded to the complexity of all of the data we have. To pick one number is going to be a real challenge. Right now, I have to say we are pretty laser focused on hospitalizations, and especially people who are so sick they need to go into an intensive care unit. We watch those numbers, you know, pretty rigorously, and make sure that their healthcare system's capacity for treating not only people with COVID, but people with any medical condition is respected and maintained. So we watch that very, very closely. We also continue to watch our percent positivity rate, which has been in the 3% range. It's gotten a little higher in the 3% range more recently with the larger caseload. But that number is still something very, very important. The other northern New England states are about double that. The other northern states in the country that are having surges in their cases are above that as well. This tells us that not only are we aware of what the new cases are, but we're also aware that we're testing adequately to have a good handle on it. So that's an important number right now. I have to say that in a future world where perhaps everyone has access to rapid and hopefully inexpensive or free antigen testing or other types of testing they can use at home, that number won't be as reliable because there won't be as many people using state-run PCR free testing facilities in making their daily decisions about what they're going to do that day.
Let's go now to Rick in South Burlington. Rick, you are on the air.
Okay. Hello.
Hi, Rick. What's your question or comment for Dr. Levine?
It's a comment, and I'm driving, so I'll have to be careful. I'm street legal.
Yes, please be careful, Rick.
From the 1st of November, so 10 days ago. If you compare how China versus the United States are handling COVID, for using their approach, for every one person that dies in China, 754 Americans die. By any standard, we are doing horribly well relative to China in this particular instance. Governments and nations rise or fall based on how the actions of their governments serve the interests of the greatest percentage of all 100% of their inhabitants. And in America, the way we're handling COVID has effectively allowed the actions of a small percentage of Americans, it's a decent percentage, but it's small relative to the greatest percentage of all Americans. And actions of a minority are very obviously adversely affecting a majority.
Rick, I'm going to just jump in here to let Dr. Levine respond. Of course, China and the U.S. have had very different experiences with COVID-19. So, Dr. Levine, briefly, how does the way that the U.S. is responding right now differ from what China has been doing?
Sure. Well, China still is using lockdowns in numerous parts of its country. And it's really a very different kind of totalitarian type government compared to the United States, obviously. So countries around the world that have tried to come close to what China is doing, that have really, you know, used abundance of lockdowns and things of that sort, are now all abandoning that tack. Because as vaccination has become a possibility, it's actually a sounder strategy to utilize. And they are finding, again, that it's hard on their population, specifically not just economy, but mental health of the population, creation of other public health problems in terms of substance use, et cetera. It's hard to keep a country going with constant return to a lockdown situation every time cases go in the wrong direction. I will not argue with the fact that the United States did not have the most expedient or successful plan from a national standpoint in the first year of the pandemic. I think we all recognize that, and we should all recognize that a 50-state strategy is not a sound strategy, not a strategy when governors of states like Vermont are competing with premiers in other countries for personal protection equipment, for testing equipment, et cetera. So no question that he's right in that regard. I'd like to think that as a country, we've clearly improved. And even Vermont, we use new information every day as part of our quality and performance improvement strategy as well. But, you know, we continue as Vermont to lead the nation in our approach to the pandemic. And though there are critics of our recent performance with the cases going up the way they have been, when you look at all of the data, we continue to be a national leader in this effort.
And we have time for just a couple more calls here. Let's go now to Gwen in Bristol. Gwen, you're on the air.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I have two questions. One is, I'm going to turn 64. I only say that because I'm not sure if this will affect your answer. I had taken the second dose of the Pfizer vaccine on May 7th, 2021, and I wondered if I should I have a booster given my age, and if you think I should, when should I register for it?
Very good. So there's two things you need to know. Number one is we have a very expansive strategy in Vermont where essentially our website says that, yes, CDC has all kinds of criteria. Those criteria involve physical and mental health issues, involve occupations, involve age, but essentially cover, it is thought, 85% of the population. So it's almost like you need to look for a reason why you might not need a booster and find that reason. And I would suspect at age 64, you could find that reason just using the current criteria. But otherwise, I would still recommend you get your booster because we know your immunity has waned. The second thing you need to know is the government is currently evaluating Pfizer's request that we expand boosting to anybody over age 18, period. No criteria in place, just be over 18. And they're taking that very seriously. So though they haven't ruled on it yet, I would suspect we will find a policy that follows through on that. Much like what Israel does for age 12 and older, and other countries in the world have been doing for age 18 and over, Canada being one of the more recent ones.
Thank you, Dr. Levine. And we have one more question from Robert. You are on the air, Robert. Go ahead. Oh, sorry, I think we might have... Oh, we might have lost him. Sorry about that. Let's go briefly to Mark in Burlington. Mark, you are on the air. And we only have about a minute left.
Hello, can you hear me?
Yes, I can. Go ahead.
Oh, thank you. Hey, Dr. Levine, it's Mark from the Vermont Racial Justice Alliance. Good afternoon to you. Thanks for the hard work that you're putting in there. Just briefly on the numbers that are happening of those who are infected. Now, you gave numbers on those who are in the general public who would have the propensity to contract the virus having been fully vaccinated. I'd be curious to understand if you could share the numbers of those who have contracted the virus. What is the percentage of those who have been fully vaccinated? I'm just trying to I think I read numbers somewhere around.
We have just a couple seconds left. Dr. Levine, do you have a quick number for us?
So I'm hoping I'm understanding Mark's question correctly, but right now 1.3% of the 467,130 people who've been fully vaccinated in Vermont have become a breakthrough case.